I'm ready when you ready. Miss right. Chris.
All right.
I don't know what they want me to say. That should be part of the introduction right there, shit. Okay, we ready.
What's happening? I'm writer, researcher, and professor Dr. Regina Bradley.
I'm music journalist Christina Lee.
From WABE and PRX, this is
Bottom of the Map, taking hip-hop conversation in a new direction.
So, what's going on, Miss Chris? How you?
I'm good. I'm excited for what we're going to talk about, trap music.
All trap, everything.
I mean, we're going to be talking about the origins, how trap became shorthand for a drug house here in Southern hip hop.
How trap decided to become mobile and become popularized and just kind of extend everywhere outside the city of Atlanta and Memphis, depending on who you're talking to.
And not only that, but how the trap has gone beyond hip-hop music to pop up in the most unconventional places.
Like you are a survivor of trap Pilates, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But first,
okay, so this is the Trap Music Museum out of Atlanta, Georgia. This was opened last year to honor the 15-year anniversary of T.I.'s own trap music.
Damn, it was 15? Yeah, it was 15.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, three,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's walk people through the museum for those who haven't been yet.
So you get there.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And you walk up in there and it's like a corner store. It's like some old hood shit corner store, right?
It's not
like
the High Museum of Art, no.
No. You walk up in there and, you know, you see like your favorite snacks on the wall. You got your little bit of, you know, drink over there. And then you walk through the doors and...
Hi, my name is Cece. I work at the Trap Music Museum. Right now, we have a few exhibits. Our main one are usually the Gucci Mane Kitchen, where it shows, like, you know, what he used to go through, kind of like a replica of what his life used to be before he got famous. Also, the Snow Room, which is our biggest one. We have big bricks of fake cocaine. And it's just a, you know, a tribute to him, also a big snowman. And our newest one is the 2 Chainz. We actually recreated it for his new 5th studio album, Rapper Go to the League, and it features the pink car that was featured on the pink trap house. And, you know, a lot of different things bring this place together, but those are probably our main three right now.
But yeah, but it's also kind of dope too, because you get towards the back of the museum and it's more contemporary folks who are doing traps.
Amigos, yeah. Future, you know.
All them folks. Let me ask you this though. So why do you think that there was a need? Do you think there was a need for a trap museum?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Why come?
Well, first of all, I mean, apparently T.I. has a gripe in which he had to remind folks that he was the first to put trap music as the name of an album, let alone coin the term.
Mm-hmm.
We can get into all that. We can fact check it all we want.
Right.
But I think we've gotten into a really interesting point in our culture where trap has come to mean a lot of other things besides being a critical site for Southern hip hop storytelling.
I'm just really fascinated by this idea that the trap has become mobile in ways that move away from, you know, what I would argue is this initial purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if you're thinking about somebody like a UGK with Pocket Full of Stones in 1992, that was like proto trap. I got a pocket full of stones. And then you get to the Soul Food album in 1995. Dirty Bill Clinton fronted me some weight. Told me keep 2, bring him back 8. And I only brought him 5 and stuck his ass for 3. Do you think that clamp of the sickest goons on me? That's the first time that I can remember hearing this articulation of the trap in the way that we kind of understood it to be when T.I. dropped the 2003 joint. So he branded it
Absolutely.
As trap. But I have always thought that there is a connection to Southern hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a Georgia girl all day, so I'm Team Atlanta. So that was like, oh, okay. But if I was to talk to somebody, like my people and them from Memphis,
uh-huh.
They'll be like, oh, hell no. That was definitely some 3-6 shit. It's interesting interesting how even in Southern hip hop, trap is articulated in these really different ways, but nothing compared to like how it's become mainstream in such a way that completely negates what it was doing earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, trap has evolved to EDM. It's evolved to Katy Perry. I mean, on the way over here, I was listening to Ariana Grande's Thank You Next, which, if you listen to the whole entire thing, has the same sort of 808s and percussion fills that have come to inform trap as a production style. It's become a lot more abstract in that sense. And now we're at the point where on Saturday, I went to my first Trap Pilates
and
class.
You barely survived.
I barely survived. None of this, you know, Zen Garden shit or anything like that. You know, basically, I go in and we're already doing like planks to like Blueface's Satiana, right? We're doing stuff to the new Iggy Azalea song. The part where I knew I was going to die.
When did you see yourself die?
Was when we started doing sumo squats to Bitch I Might Be by Gucci Mane.
Wow.
And I could barely keep up. So the instructor's like, hey, hey, hey. And she's trying to get us to yell at the same time. And meanwhile, I'm just like,
I'm trying to die. So basically, she was like, is you squatting? Bitch, yeah, I might be.
Is you rolling? Is you rolling?
Bitch, I might be. Bitch, I might be. Bitch, I might be.
That's the place that we're at right now, where Trap Pilates is in existence, Trap Brunch is in existence, Trap Karaoke is in existence. You know, it's gotten to a place where I think for all these folks who are notably like Black entrepreneurs, that they're having to carve out their own space in what should otherwise be like mundane Sunday activities. You know, who wouldn't want to go to brunch? But they're coming from the perspective of, oh, we need a Trap Brunch because we don't see ourselves welcome in these particular spaces. These events, they want to signify that they're catering to like this younger, hipper crowd, but they don't want to say younger and hipper. So the easy way for to connote that, I think, is with trap.
So instead of saying Black,
you
they
say
want
trap.
To say trap.
Exactly.
But see, here's the thing though, right? So like the thing that's interesting with me about that is that the folks who are actually in this culture, the folks who actually live this life are not being invited to trap brunch or trap karaoke, right? It's like it becomes a trend in such a way that it becomes problematic because, yeah, it might be hip and fun and you know, connotates a particular sort of experience, but it also erases the actual very real realities of folks who are living in these spaces who are being overlooked in favor of this trend. Like, I think that's the challenge is that, yeah, you can have a trap brunch, but I mean, like, you know, who specifically are you catering to?
Mm-hmm.
And usually the folks that you are catering to are middle, upper class, college educated folks. And I think that we need to kind of complicate, not necessarily bring folks back to the trap, like actually have a real ass brunch and like a bando, like, you know, you don't want roaches crawling over your eggs Benedict, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, it's an important conversation to have, is to recognize, at least recognize, that the way that we are commodifying and capitalizing upon this idea of trap, these trap aesthetics that we're celebrating, are still connected to a very real lifestyle and reality that folks are living on a daily basis.
And you know, honestly, we could be a little bit more creative with our marketing, should we choose to.
Right, everything ain't gotta be trap, folks. I came up in the era of, you know, trap was talked about, but you didn't actually have a location to go and visit, like 2 Chainz's Trap House.
Let's talk about, you've been there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was like, you know, he did it as promotion for Pretty Girls Like Trap. And it was like this big ass pink house.
It was a house that he had rented off of Howl Mill, like a white bungalow that he painted Pepto-Bismol pink. Initially just to promote his album.
And it became this thing.
A community center, practically.
Mm-hmm.
It became a tourist site. You know, there was a box.
They had church.
They had Trap Church. They had Trap Sip and Paint.
Uh-huh. They Trap Church, Trap Sip and Paint. And real shit, I think they also had like health screenings, like
free
medical
HIV
screenings.
Testing. Yeah.
That's fire though. When you make the trap applicable to a community concern, I'm with that.
Dun, dun,
It's like The Price is Right. Christina Lee, come on down to play this next round of Things That Don't Fit in the Trap, according to Dr. Bradley. Are you ready, Christina?
I'm ready.
All right.
Let's
your
make some
first
money.
Question. Which one of these three things does not fit into the trap?
Okay.
Bando.
Okay.
Baking soda.
Okay.
Katy Perry.
Oh, this is where the trap hears came out.
Mm-hmm.
Trap hears jumped out today.
Yeah, she came out swinging. You hear me?
I know what you want me to say. However.
What do you mean what I want you to say? I gave you two things that are part of the trap. And you, you trying to put Katy Perry in the bando?
But that's what I'm saying. That trap music has, that's how trap music has become mainstream. You know what I mean? I think trap music became part of our pop music lexicon in part because Katy Perry decided to feature Juicy J on a single called Dark Horse.
There's no going back.
She's a beast. I call her karma. She eats your heart out like Jeffrey Dahmer. Be careful. Try not to lead her on. Shawty heart is on steroids because her love is so strong.
I wish you could see my face, America. That don't quite fit in the trap, according to Dr. Bradley.
Okay.
I just can't get into Fetty Wap's Trap Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a full-on meltdown when somebody asked me about this, and I can finally articulate why now.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Hear me out. Hear me out.
All
you,
right.
Hear me out before you write me off.
Before I fight. All right.
Yep. Because I'm not suggesting that love doesn't exist in the trap, because, you know, you got the brotherly love, you know what I'm saying? Super producer Floyd say, like, babies are being born in the trap. Babies ain't coming through storks. You know what I'm saying? Bullet hole storks. You know what I mean? But the romance, like, he's romancing this girl.
Uh-huh.
With drug, like, drug cultures. Like, you're going to be my side. You're going to whip up the pot. You're going to do all. And I'm just
they're
like,
in this hustle together. It's starting another mom and pop shop.
A mom and pop shop?
Yeah.
She my trap queen, let her hit the bando. We be counting up, watch how far them bands go. We just set a goal, talking about your Lambos. A 56 a gram, 500 grams though. Man, I swear I love her, how she work the damn pole. Hit the strip club, we be letting bands go. Everybody hating, we just call them fans though. In love with the money, I ain't never letting go.
I just can't get with that. I just can't get with this idea of let me pitch the woo to you using the trap.
But these songs that you, the trap purist,
mm-hmm.
do not like, whether that is a dark horse or whether there's a trap queen, I really think that those songs are the inflection point by which, like, trap
okay.
music culture has become
turned the corner.
Mainstream. Because I really can't imagine another time where somebody like a Fetty Wap would join Taylor Swift on stage during the 1989 World Tour to where both of them are singing Trap Queen, right? And I mean,
Taylor Swift is singing Trap Queen.
You haven't seen this?
I rest my case. We can keep it moving. But can you talk a little bit about, like, what that significance is in turning the corner, especially coming at it from your perspective as a journalist? Like,
mm-hmm.
when do you think that trap really was like, oh, this is something that we need to really hone in on and write about, talk about, and redefine for, like, a mainstream audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the moment where we had to recognize this being a thing is when it started to exist beyond those spaces, and it did become like it did influence, like, EDM music, you know, and to some conversations among the hip hop space as well, as to, like, it really kind of led to all these conversations as to who this music, like, really belongs to.
So who do you think it belongs to?
I mean, I think it absolutely belongs to the South.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're at a point where, even though I think the internet has boosted our accessibility to different types of music, and the point where, you know, trap music is more or less easily produced with the sort of technology that we have, we're still in a space where I think it all kind of comes back to Atlanta, that even though you may be from the other side of the world, you have to acknowledge where it comes from.
So when we have these ideas and conversations about trap, I think it's important to recognize that different trap rappers focus on different elements of the trap. So when you have a T.I., he's bringing that humanistic element to it, where he's talking about these human experiences, this introspective experience, while still being like, I'm still king of the South, but I'm also dealing with this really grown ass man shit that I can't really talk about in other spaces. And DJ Toomp helped him to do that. Like, there's a particular sound that was associated with "And I'm Serious" and a trap music. And then when you get to somebody like a Jeezy and Shouty Red, like, folks don't have enough conversations about Shouty Red's contributions to this, like, sonic element of what the trap does. He brought that grit. So, like, when you listen to Bottom of the Map, yeah, that's where we got our name from, Bottom of the Map. I mean, like, it's this echo that's, like, starts the song. It's almost like you're descending. It's almost like a descent. Hey. Into you, like, you know what it is. Like, it's like, oh, for real, it's almost like a descent into the trap, and it's not gonna be this nice, easy, fun thing.
Hey, let's get it. It's Young Jizzle from the bottom of the map. Got a 50 round clip on the bottom of the strap. Hey, 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 hey,
y'all already know what time it is. Get your hoods up yourself. I do it for the trappers with the.
A Zaytoven, for example, brings that bounce to it, and you're like, oh, so you can have a little bit of fun in the trap. At least let your trunk knock a little bit.
Zay got the motherfucking bass thumping. Dolph got the motherfucking trap jumping. Doors to the trap open.
So I think it's important that we complicate what the sounds of the trap do in addition to what transpired and what turned the corner, if you will, about what mainstream think trap is and what it's not.
Man, and this is all before, you know, Travis Scott had trap sounding like a Calabasas Coke party, you know?
Mm-hmm. Something I want to ask you is, you know, kind of help me out with my professorisms, is if I think about like a timeline and trying to plug in acts in a timeline for how trap has evolved into what we know now,
mm-hmm.
like you would definitely put, you know, UGK, like I said, but where would you put folks who aren't necessarily like immediately thought about as trap artists, like a Master P, Cash Money, right? 3-6 Mafia, right? Mm-hmm. And even like Rick Ross to an extent talking about, like, you know, super producer Floyd called it the luxury trap, which is which is dope, right? So I'm just kind of curious to kind of hear your thoughts about how do these folks fit into this larger conversation about not only just trap, but how trap has turned the corner in popular culture.
Well, it's absolutely not a stretch. You know, I mean, for Master P, I think trap music certainly inherited like his independent hustle, his Avon Lady hustle, is the way he put it in Solange's album.
Mm-hmm.
I think with 3-6 Mafia, I mean, Juicy J in particular is just drinking like the fountain of youth because he and his production style just continue to be relevant to this day. Like, I don't think there's been a year that has passed since trap music's inception. Like, where 3-6 Mafia doesn't get sampled or doesn't get referenced or doesn't even show up as like a production reference point. You know what I mean? Like, all that foundational stuff is still there. If you were to put on Tear the Club Up now, it's going to sound like it came out of 2019, just as it did the year that it came out.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And the other point that I'm also thinking about, too, is this idea of gangster music that came out of the South before it was labeled trap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do we you know, coincide the two? Like, how do we put them in conversation with each other?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the things that's important in thinking about Southern hip hop is that one subgenre is always feeding off of the other. So, like, I explain it to my students that there are multiple Souths and multiple Southern sounds and multiple experiences and that the music captures that complexity.
Yeah.
And it just kind of shifts a little bit. But I think that, you know, it kind of goes back to this conversation about, you know, like corner music.
Mm-hmm.
Trap and gangster music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you have country fried gangsters? Yeah, you can have country fried gangsters, but does their sound necessarily dictate them in a way that distinguishes them from other regions of the country? Like, what do you think about that?
Well, I think trap music is very much part of that, you know, gangster music lineage. Like, I don't think there's any denying of that fact.
Mm-hmm.
I think trap, the way that I sort of see it, is sort of like another era of that. Because I think, like, you know, the drug dealer narrative, that's as timeless of an American story as it has ever been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Scarface was just one iteration of it. And we're talking about both the Al Pacino variety and the Brad Jordan variety, right?
Right.
You know, so I think it's all already in conversation with one another.
Say hello to my little friend!
So if I was like, you know, OG trap folks, proto trap folks, I would definitely put like UGK in that conversation.
Absolutely.
Backbone from the Dungeon Family, you know, Concrete Law was definitely trap before we could recognize it. As
Cool
trap.
Breeze was like a proto trap rapper, oh, yeah, in my opinion.
Definitely, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you also got like Gucci Mane, your T.I.'s, your Jeezy's. So help me fill in the blanks with like the newer version. Who else would go there? And like, did they arrive when, as you're kind of pointing out, it turned the corner? So like Amigos, for example.
Uh-huh.
Like what is it about the Amigos that folks are really like just gung-ho on this? They are.
Uh-huh.
Like trap.
Yeah. Trap shit. Nah. No. No. No, no. No. Up early in the morning trapping. Trap, trap. You can get them on your asking. Ask. How many chickens you can get them whichever way nigga trap turns Zaxby's.
I think Migos comes from a space where they're able to sort of like play on the trap music tropes and do it in sort of like a pop art way. Like if they're picking up from where Gucci Mane left off, mm-hmm. as far as like really having fun with the actual metaphors. So mm-hmm. it's like they sort of understand that, you know, that the kitchen is there, you know, you're going to be talking about baking soda. But how did they end up phrasing it? They phrase it as birds in the trap saying Brian McKnight. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, a Quavo lyric from like from the Travis Scott album of the same name.
But didn't Travis Scott name his album that?
He did. But it stemmed from a Quavo lyric. So I think we're at this point where like a lot of trap musicians are just using the trap as sort of like their actual playground. Mm-hmm. You know, they're using these tropes to kind of like, you know, flex their own lyrical dexterity and things like that, to where I think it's just, it's a well-worn genre at this point, you know?
Mm. Birds in the trap sing by McKnight. Percocet and codeine, please don't take my life. She had a dream with Celine, so I bought it twice.
The line between being the dealer and being the user is completely gone. We have to address that, right? So yeah. It's like when we think about a trap music, a thug motivation 101, what happens when the thug starts to use his own shit? Like he starts to use his own supply and becomes a user and a dealer. So, I mean, like you have to put in conversations, Chris, like Travis Scott.
You have this Houston native mm-hmm. Borrowing all the sound signifiers, which we become familiar. But lyrically speaking, it's really hard to distinguish whether he's talking about some relationship going wrong or whether he's talking about, you know, some psychedelics gone wrong, right?
Amen, highlight, sleepy, night night, yeah. Flashes, spotlight, cooler, nice guy, healthy, peace, peace, peace to.
You have the same sort of conflicted narrative with Future's DS2.
Right.
Because, you know, often, you know, he is reflecting upon, you know, how this drug dealer come up is like really hard, you know, for like his native Kirkwood. But the way that the production has evolved to like, you know, feature like Southside and Metro Boomin, you honestly feel like you're on a bender, like whenever you're listening to something like that. So those lines have become increasingly blurred as trap has ascended to the mainstream.
I mean, for the uninitiated, DS2 is Dirty Sprite 2, which was his first, you know, you got to explain it to the people.
That's,
you know,
true.
What the Dirty Sprite is. Dirty Sprite 1, and then he came out with Dirty Sprite 2. And it was like, if you didn't understand and love Dirty Sprite 1, you couldn't appreciate DS2. So there's that.
Except you can.
It's you fine. Really can.
I just did a dose of Percocet for some strippers. I just pour this lean in my cup like it's liquor. I just need a whole lot of drugs in my system. I just try acid for the first time, I feel good.
Treasure brain, misery, codeine in my delivery. I pulled up in a big beat, swerving like a hippie. Moving with the dopers and pushers in the Rover.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such an interesting conversation to have, particularly now we're in this moment of like social media and the internet,
uh-huh.
where, you know, once upon a time when these songs were really coming out and being produced as like new shit,
yeah.
it was so significant to represent where you're from in ways that you don't necessarily have to represent now. And the Migos come to mind for me because if I'm thinking about trap as an export of Atlanta music, mm-hmm. not knocking them, but that's Gwinnett. Like, I'm not necessarily thinking that Gwinnett is automatically connected to you know, this, like, mm-hmm. the literal space that mm-hmm. this is coming out of. I mean, mm-hmm. especially when they let go, you know, when they downvoted letting MARTA come out there. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's real trap shit right there. Like, you're going to have to move the bricks through Lyft. You know uh-huh. what I'm saying? But I think that's a really good point, and I kind of want to push you on that a little bit, is thinking about how the ways that we engage these ideas of trap.
Uh-huh.
Like, what makes it, like, what makes trap still significant? Like, what is there a need to think about trap still being significant as it relates to being Southern? Like, does it have to stay in the South to be, like, trap?
I think it,
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, to your point about Migos, mm-hmm. you know, I think Migos speaks to the idea of an evolving Atlanta.
Okay.
In the sense that Migos speaks to a demographic shift. They speak about the plug being Vietnamese, and they call themselves Migos because of the increasingly diversifying, you know, populations that they're seeing on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why Gwinnett County is now a majority-minority county. And I think Migos, you know, whether deliberately or not, kind of speaks to that existence. So as crazy as it may seem, like, Migos does speak to a reality that I don't think T.I. necessarily could have imagined.
Okay.
And then I guess to your second point, I think for sure, you know, trap music in particular is always going to be in conversation with a narrative that is rooted in the South. But I suppose that, you know, with the stuff, with something like a, you know, a trap and sip and pain and whatever, like, the underlying story is one about, you know, moving, like, making the most of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about, like, it's really about, I guess, just, like, recognizing the humanity that comes yes. with, like, the American struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how that American struggle looks based on region. Like, I know mm-hmm. folks don't want to have that conversation, but the American dream for Southerners is different than mm-hmm. the rest of the world. On the one hand, we're still battling our demons from the past. Like, yeah. we're still trying to figure out what our next moves are. And one of the things that stands out to me about, you know, kind of like those origin points of trap, is that it does show the humanity, especially if you're listening to a Tip or a Jeezy. They show you that humanity of these folks who are living this on a daily basis. Like, this isn't just a drive-by type of
yeah.
experience. This mm-hmm. is like, how do I sustain myself? Not only myself, but those around me, my boys, my people, my dudes, and still, like, try to make this money and get this American dream, because the American dream isn't necessarily, you know, manifest destiny
uh-huh.
in the trap.
Uh-huh.
The American dream is just, I need more than enough money to get by.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And one thing that I think is interesting about the concept of trap is, you know, when you're able to, like, jump in and leave out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the initial, that's not called a trap. That's a two-way street. That's a two-way door. A trap means that you're in and that's it. And you try to make do by any means, like, hustle by any means.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's fascinating to me that you have a lot of artists who are kind of working through these things. And it's starting to make me wonder about, can you age out of the trap?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, can you age out of the trap? Or does that, like, start some other type of conversation for the folks who, I tried to get out, did I want to get out?
Uh-huh.
And now that I'm hitting 40, yeah. 50,
uh-huh.
60,
uh-huh.
you know, am I still going to be on the corner? Am I still going to be carrying these bricks along with, like, you know, my AARP card to get my discount?
Uh-huh.
Like, how does that work? So I guess what I'm asking is, you know, the way that trap is established now, do you still feel like it's represented as, like, a young man's game?
I don't think so at all. Well, I mean, for one thing, Jay-Z never aged out of the corner. He always mines his past for inspiration to kind of remind himself of where he came from.
Is he reminding himself or his fans?
I think it's both. I think it's both. That's to be fair. But I think the artist that really sort of epitomizes, like, this collision of, like, past and present and how those are always going to be inextricably linked
mm-hmm.
is 2 Chainz, is Pretty Girls Like Trap Music, because I really listened to that album earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
The album always comes back to a Riverdale Road. Mm-hmm. It always comes back to burglar bars. It's interesting because it feels like part survivor's guilt, part reminder of how far he's come. And it serves as partially as a reminder. It's like, well, I've earned this. You know what I mean? Like, I've earned the right to dress up like the lavender codeine cowboy that I am today with the Louis Vuitton, you know, like, fanny pack and all that stuff. It's not a clear-cut answer, but I think he kind of speaks to how all that has to coexist.
culture. If the trap has gone, you know, mobile and global, right? I guess the other question would be, do you think it's going to go in the way of other genres of music? So, for example, we were talking to one of our other producers, Christine, right? Mm-hmm. And she was talking about the significance of punk rock and how punk rock initially started as an underground, very, like, audience-specific type of music, and then it kind of collapsed on itself. So, you know, Chris, do you think that's going to happen with trap? I mean, like, do you think that trap has become popular enough that it won't collapse on itself?
I don't think trap is going to go by the way of punk, Regina, where it comes to mean one thing, which mm-hmm. is a, you know, a countercultural answer to what's happening in the mainstream, okay. saying that it's like anti-establishment, mm-hmm. but then it evolves to a space where, like, it just is completely meaningless. Like, you know, it's an antiquated, you know, term for what's going to be described as like hip and, you know, with it and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think trap is always going to be in conversation with the roots that you're talking about. The thing about punk and the reason why it died was because it was too constrained by like its old ideas within itself. It was too restricted to very certain sound signifiers. It was too restricted to the fact that there had to be 3 to 5 white dudes in it, right? Like, trap music has gone so far beyond that point. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the trap's mainstream rise has kind of gone to show how universal it could be, but mm-hmm. also in how it can be by speaking to something very, very specific. And I think that's because, you know, the folks that are creating the music have allowed it to grow and change to the point where I think a lot of folks can come to it and relate to it and have all these different entry points. But at the same time, it is so specific because they always kind of bring it back to the Southern hip hop narrative.
There it is.
Thank you for listening to Bottom of the Map, brought to you by WABE and PRX. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. It'll help more people find this show. Follow Bottom of the Map on your social media platforms at BOTMPod. Again, that's BOTMPod. Follow, subscribe, connect. Holla. Bottom of the Map is hosted by Christina Lee and Dr. Regina Bradley. Produced by Floyd Hall, that's me. Edited by Stephen Key. Our executive producers are Jaanne Berry and Christine Dempsey. Ayanna Taylor is our project manager. Our theme music is produced by Smith and Cash. Special thanks to Mike Johns and Lois O.G. Reitzes. This program is made possible, in part, by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
I love you, Roy.